14th, 1992, Tuesday, and we're all arriving at the county building one by one. I drove Mel over with his video camera. Jerry Rose has arrived, Paul Brindell, perhaps some other people too. This is the day the Union of the Homeless plans an occupation of Josephine and River Street properties, and I will be there. Well, it's, what? You like it? Lotus likes the flyer, which is CD, and you got to have a magnifying glass for half of it, but otherwise, looks good. It's, why is the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless occupying public property? It does or it doesn't?
It doesn't. The one they added to it.
This was the latest one that Anders gave me. It was actually at the printers, so...
Oh, wait a minute. Let me read it.
May actually have everything in it. Tony has arrived with the picket sticks, and here's Wonton Dave.
Hi, Jerry.
Flyer Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Norman.
So we have a small but doughty crew here. Small but mighty. Mighty small. It'll be growing. That's right. This is going to grow. It's going to get big. We got watermelon. We got endless picket signs. Let's check out these picket signs. We got stop, sleep patrol, start rent control. We have a right to exist. All power to Robert. No, just kidding. It's 250 beds, 2,500 homeless. Affordable housing now. Maybe we should start putting some of these out.
Gonna be there. That'll be 25.
No justice, no peace. Whoa. Windy day. So there we are. More later. So holding a banner, Jerry Rose and John Stewart. The banner, what does the banner say, gang? Houselessness is no crime. Let the people sleep. How about jury nullification? Oh, that is the jury. It's leaving. Oh, what am I doing? Nullify bad laws, all you juries. A word to them. We have Wonton Dave opening these ceremonies here.
The abbreviation of the right to sleep is taking place not only here in Santa Cruz, but in many parts of the United States throughout this so-called land of liberty and freedom. A land where supposedly we don't have to have a job to make large dollars to be able to live without being arrested. Where supposedly you're not a criminal simply because you're poor and can't find a job. Or maybe you don't want to work for the type of people that you might have to work for in order to get a really good paying job. So, the first person to be speaking here today is Paul Brindle. I forgot what organization he's from, but if he comes up here to talk, I'm sure he'll be more than glad to tell you about where he's from, where he's coming from, and what he's going to say. Mr. Brindle. Thanks. That's Brindell. That's okay. I'm with the Community Action Board of Santa Cruz County. We're an anti-poverty agency. We're one of those groups that formed in the war on poverty 26 years ago. The last 10 years or so, we've been dealing primarily with the symptoms of poverty and homelessness and hunger. Growing in our country are two of the most intense symptoms of poverty that exist in communities all across America. This isn't the first time that we've seen such a difference between the very, very rich and the rest of us. This isn't even the second time we've seen such a chasm between those who have so much and those who have so little. The last time this happened was during the Great Depression 60 years ago. And the myths, the pain that came out of that in my own family led, I think, in part to my becoming a social activist. The stories of the wind blowing in from the west, blowing away the soil, and blowing away all the hopes, and the bankers' tractors coming in and plowing all of the farmhouses out and destroying the barns and driving the people off of their land, land that they'd had for generations, created a great, vast migration of people who were homeless, wandering, looking for work, looking for food. It was John Steinbeck. This is Steinbeck country. John Steinbeck in The Grapes of Wrath, I think, put it more beautifully than any other author of America. And I would recommend that anyone who hasn't read it or hasn't read it in a while, pick it up and read it, because it's happening all over again. The intensity of the deprivation simply can't continue. John Steinbeck analyzed it in a way that made it clearer for me. He said, basically, those who have don't seem to understand that when people are without, when they have nothing, they begin by being scared and they end up angry. They come together and they share their stories and they tell them in campgrounds, in communities all across our nation. And they frighten people who live in homes. And those people drive them out, just like they did. Just like they did 60 years ago. And those people become desperate. And out of that desperation comes a movement. And out of that movement comes social change. And changes in policy. And it will happen. It happened before. And it'll happen now. It's the second Grapes of Wrath. It gives me great hope to see people coming together, because the only way out of this is to organize. And you're organizing. Community Action Board over a year ago passed a resolution saying it's absolutely unconscionable to have a sleeping ban if you don't have enough beds for people to sleep in, thus forcing people to break the law simply to lie down and sleep. So we're here to support you. I want to thank you for this opportunity, and I wish luck to all of us. Organize! I've been asked to make a couple announcements before the next speaker comes on. Firstly, in the middle of the program, there'll be an open mic, and if you want to sign up on the list for the open mic, then talk with Kim over there. She's in the red t-shirt with the Affordable Housing Now sign. And if somebody would like some watermelon, there's watermelon over there for people that would like to munch on some watermelon. And the next speaker here today is Lotus Meaner, who is with the Welfare...
What?
Maynard. I'm sorry, I'm bad on names. So here's Lotus Maynard, who's with the Welfare Parent Support Group.
Thank you. I've been asked to explain a little bit what these cuts mean that the governor and the legislature are fighting over. Basically, Wilson wants to cut AFDC by 25%. That means with a family of two, instead of $500 a month, they will have $400 a month. That's kind of a big cut. He also wants to cut out in-home housing services, a program that was started to save money and is keeping people out of institutions. He also wants to cut the Medi-Cal program so there will be no more outpatient medicine paid for. His cuts call for $2.3 billion. The Democrats proposed $605 million. And they both claim they can balance the budget. That's for education. For health and welfare, Wilson wants to cut $1.534 billion, again billion. The Democrats want to cut $917 million. It still means some cuts, but there's a little difference there. We've lost one shelter in this county already, and it isn't replaced by room to camp. We need places to sleep. I am not homeless right now, but I have been. I spent over a year being homeless in this county. And that's why I'm a homeless advocate. Dave.
Good call.
Thank you, Lotus. I'd like to again announce that if anybody wants to have an opportunity at the open mic session, that if they go and sign up with Kim, she's standing over there with a red t-shirt and a sign that says Affordable Housing Now, that they'll be able to sign up for the open mic. Our next speaker, John Stewart, is from the organization Mad People and Madhouse People.
Thanks. I'd like to thank people for the opportunity to say something. I don't want to try to explain. I would like to sort of explain where I'm coming from. I'm a survivor of what I call the mental health system. Not the mental health system, but the mental health system. I'm a ex-psychiatric inmate, meaning I've been locked up in state hospitals. I'm really a permanent psychiatric inmate in the sense that I'm an inmate on the outside. I'm subject to being locked up again under some circumstances. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that once you get a psychiatric label, it's permanent. Depending on how long you have it under the circumstances, I've had it 27 years now. I was 9 years a voluntary psychiatric patient. What I'm here to do is to try to give a sort of perspective on, let's see if I can get to where I'm going here. Hope you'll bear with me a moment. So I'd like to try to give a perspective, my particular perspective on two aspects of the so-called homeless problem, namely the fact of the existence out here at Harvey West Park of a place called Supportive Outreach Services, which is supposed to be for so-called mentally ill, homeless mentally ill drug abusers, and the fact that in the shelter over here at River Street, there are a certain number of beds set aside for so-called mentally ill people. I would like to speak to that as an issue, how that came to be that there's such a set aside for people who are supposed to be like me, why they're doing that, and what purpose that serves in our system. In our political economic system, that serves, on the one hand, to emphasize and convince the public that the so-called homeless problem is actually an individual problem. You'll see the numerous articles purporting to have surveyed and interviewed homeless people and show that 30% are mentally ill and 30% are drug abusers and 30% are worthless, no good hustlers, panhandlers and so forth, and 10% we can have sympathy for if we can only find those 10%, right? On the other hand, it also serves the purpose of dividing people who are homeless against ourselves in the sense that there appears to be a certain privileged class called mentally ill drug abusers who are going to get better services and more attention than the other people who are homeless. It also serves the purpose of dividing an individual against himself, because in the desperate straits of being homeless on the streets for like 5 or 10 years, you see this place. It's for mentally ill drug abusers. So you say, well, I smoked dope, I've shot up, I drank a lot, or I do this, I do that, and I'm crazy. I know I'm crazy. You know, so you go there and you try to cop a plea. You're in your desperate situation, you do that. People do that. They know, a person knows in their heart, you know, that what is really needed is a simple place to live, a job, and so forth. But in a desperate situation we're in, we do that. So we're divided against ourselves. We're divided amongst ourselves by seeing this so-called privileged class. But I'm here to tell you that's one of the most desperate decisions a person can possibly make. I've been to the state hospitals. I've been, as it were, figuratively at the door to the back wards. I've seen what it might be like to be permanently on those places, to be given, can you imagine being given the right to refuse psychosurgery, experimental psychiatric surgery, to be given that right, which is to say, given that right as it is given to a conservator to decide for you that you will be subject to experimental psychosurgery. That's the kind of stuff that goes on in mental hospitals. They have not stopped psychosurgery. They will not stop psychosurgery. It may come back as shock treatment has come back. When a person has a psychiatric label, they're on the periphery of a sequence of circles of hells, of hell worlds, real hell worlds. If you read the story recently about a person, three people at Atascadero State Hospital dying during a heat wave from heat prostration because they were on Haldol, which stops the person's body's ability to adapt to heat. These people died. No one out here in the public face tells someone who they're getting ready to put on Haldol that is a potential possible future that person faces while they're on Haldol. They're not told that. They're not told about the three people that died. They're not told about the fact that these drugs, people routinely choke to death on these damn drugs because these psychiatric drugs destroy the gag reflex so that people aspirate their food. They're choking to death. People think, well, that's what happened to him. We didn't do the Heimlich maneuver. Hell, they're dead as a result of the fact that the psychiatric drugs causes the gag reflex to be lost. Also, you lose your ordinary cycle, your ordinary learned physical motor responses on those psychiatric drugs. I'm telling you that the mental health system is a mental health system. It's a circle, a sequence of circles of hells. Out here in the public, you see this wonderful, benevolent face and all these wonderful people. They're trying to help you, you understand? But the fact is, there's no help there. Absolutely. You either use the system and it will use you, but once you get a psychiatric label, you're really... I'm not trying to win sympathy, you understand, for people, right? I'm not trying to win sympathy for people like myself. I'm trying to warn people who may make that desperate choice. The question of how it got to be that way goes back to how the whole corporate structure is organized in this nation, namely the vast sums of money there are that can go to the pharmaceutical companies off of psychiatric drugs, and the fact that this vast money supports the psychiatrists who propagandize the public with these types of solution. My warning is that there may come a time when the psychiatric fraternity, as it were, and it is a fraternity, it's a patriarchy, when the psychiatrists come at us with their psychiatric solution to the homeless problem, which would be to shut down the shelters and close them, lock them up, and they would become the future mental hospitals. They've done it before. They round us all, you know. The point is, I just want to warn you about that. Anyway, I see my time is up. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Before we call the first person on that signed up to speak, let me say that there's some food over here to the side. And you can still sign up to speak by going to see Kim in the red t-shirt sitting over there on the concrete. And the first person to sign up to speak was Mr. Robert Norris. So, oh, here he is.
All right. We need lots of speakers up here. Everybody should, particularly those people who haven't spoken before, should stand up and speak out. Because everybody has heard, some of us, but a lot of us people haven't heard. The reason we're here today is because City Council is not listening. They don't care about people outside being arrested, ticketed, and harassed for sleeping. There's nothing new in this. What is new is what we're doing here today. There's a group of people here who intend to go to a piece of property over at Josephine and River Street and set up a tent city as the first step toward demanding that there be a place for people to sleep legally. Now, people here who are watching, I encourage you to come along. I encourage you to join in if you can. I encourage you to think about initiating your own actions. Some of us, I was one of them, didn't feel this action was quite radical enough, but we're joining it anyway because we feel it's important to bring as many people together here as possible. I don't have much else to say. I'd like to see the next speaker.
Thank you, Rob. I think it's the shortest I've ever seen you speak. In fact, I know it is. The next person that signed up to speak, I think, I'm not sure about the first name, but the last name is Williams. Is it Velvet Williams?
Hey, Velvet. Hey, Velvet.
See if this thing is working here. I'm not normally able to speak here, but I'm going to take the chance, okay? Basically, what I want to point out to everybody, like we all heard it 1,000 times before, but we'll just say it for GP, okay? Basically, what I'm going to say is that these recent AFDC cuts, as we all know, is going to put a lot of us out in the street. I may become one of the homeless. I sure damn don't want to be, thank you. And I don't think my children want to be either. People don't realize that we're all connected, whether we're homeless, whether we're on welfare, whether we're middle class, whether we're poor, rich, you know, white, or whatever we are. But see, a lot of people don't see this. A lot of people think that we're just a bunch of lowlifes who don't want to do nothing, don't want to get a job, don't want to do nothing. So I think we do need to realize that there's a big problem out there, and we need to do something very soon, as we all know. The situation's not getting any better. Every day I read in the paper about more people becoming more homeless, or the fact that we cannot find a place to sleep at night that's safe and comfortable, and that we have nowhere to go. I promised my children a long time ago that if I ever did become homeless, I would never let them become sleeping in the woods or sleeping underneath bridges or things like that, because that's what I'm fighting against. But they don't give me that chance when they don't get very much money at the end of the month, or even at the very beginning of the month. They don't give me very much of anything. I'm lucky, though. I'm associated with some very wonderful people who have enlightened me and become powerful and feeling that I can accomplish things like coming out and speaking and taking out and marching in the streets or whatever is required. And I have made a promise to myself that someday, soon, that I'm going to get arrested, because I'm tired of just sitting back and watching things just go along their merry way. I want to become out there. I want to get out there, and I want to show that I'm willing to risk my family and my beliefs to get out there and get out in the street and be arrested, to say, look at me, I'm willing to do this. Are you willing to take that risk? Because I know that if there's other people in this crowd that are willing to do it. And I hope I can someday. I want to do it soon, but it takes time. They don't realize that if I do go out and I get arrested, that my children can be taken away from me, and I don't want that. I want to set it up, and I want to make sure I'm set up, and my children are set up, and I only have 1 minute, so I got to get it off the mic here. But I love everybody, and I hope we keep it going, and I hope we keep organized, and I hope we keep our thoughts together and our beliefs together, because we know we're in it, and we're in it for life.
Right
wife and also would like to have something to eat. And our next speaker is Rural Rainbow Weaver. Here she comes. Oh, here he comes.
Want to go first? How about if the next one goes out? I mean, goes before it does.
Okay, Linda, do you want to go?
Okay, well, this is Willow and Linda Edwards.
Yeah, I'm glad to see all these people out here, and I hope, you know, my thing is, I believe that to take the country back for the people, and that we have a right to the land, we have a right to buildings and all this stuff, but I'm not a speaker, but I'm just going to just throw out my feelings, and I'm not concerned anymore about what the government's doing, but I'm concerned about what the people are doing and what we can do to change things on our own, because we have a lot of strength and I think a lot of intelligence among us, and we got to stop letting the government control us. And I believe we have resources and we can do it. And I believe that the concern I have is what's happening in this country and in Santa Cruz. It has to do with the service providers that have been helping the homeless, providing them with shelters and free food and all this stuff. And I believe they're all a bunch of scammers who are taking money from the homeless people and using us to make money so they can have jobs. So anything that's going on in this town right now that has to, I'm against them, and I'm working overtime in any way I can to get rid of them. And I think that we want to go back to feeding people, and we want to take care of people and get away from these bureaucratic idiots who are using us to make money. I'm homeless. No, I'm not homeless. I'm houseless. And this guy here is houseless, and a few of us are houseless. And we're the ones who live on the street and deal with the crap that goes on. And I'm tired of what's happening, and I'm tired of people making money off of me. And I want to make my own resources. And I'm exposing these people. And this one of the people I'm exposing is the free meal behind the River Street Shelter that's run by Karen Gillette, which is nothing but the biggest scam in this town right now, making money and giving out food to people who are poor, food that is so bad, people are getting food poisoning. And this man can attest to it, and I think there's maybe other people out here who can attest to it. And things like that have got to go. We deserve good food just as much as anybody else. And I don't care that, you know, they can say, well, it's free, so that doesn't matter, you know. People need to eat good food so we can get our lives together and go on. And I think they're just trying to keep us in control and take away our rights from us. And martial law is just about to take place. And people like us are going to be rounded up one of these days. And, you know, I'm willing to start standing against it. And a friend of mine, his name is Peter, he went and he tried to get rid of this thing called Navstar. And I thought that was a great thing, too, because this thing is going to be able to control and keep an eye on everybody. And we'll have no more privacy. This is Will. I'm going to let him talk. He has something to say about the free meal and maybe something else.
Thank you.
Well, I've never gotten any food poisoning from the free meal, but that was like a few months ago. The food isn't that good. I mean, it sucks. It tastes like shit. So, you know, I mean, what I got to say about the cops, lording it over and saying all this stuff, you know, we gotta exercise our power from within and stop this power over. And we gotta, if everybody with a house took in at least one homeless person, there'd be no homelessness. And that's all I got to say. And we gotta take back the night and take back our streets. So.